While the Shang dynasty was making its mark in China, and while Pharaoh Amenhotep II was making his mark in Egypt because he was the Pharaoh of the Exodus, Shamua, Shaphat, Igal, Palti, Gadiel, Gadi, Amiel, Sether, Nabi, and Gul were making their mark on Israel. What? You haven't heard of those guys? Why not? You know, who were Shamua and his brethren? Well, they were leaders in Israel, men who stood out among the tribes because they cared for their people, had compassion on their people, and they had the skills necessary to lead them to their goal. They had established themselves in the eyes of their tribes, demonstrating that they had the ability to get things done. And when Moses gave them a new job, he knew he could count on them because he knew they were men of influence. In fact, they did something that Moses, as a leader, never got to do. Now, Moses had some wonderful privileges that no one else on earth has had. And yet, these men did something that not even Moses got to do. Every Israelite wanted to do what these men did, but during their day did not. Also, they obeyed Moses and the Lord. Moses told them to do something, and they did it, but for some reason, we do not know these men by name. In fact, there was even a valley in Israel that was renamed because of something they discovered there. And the thing that they discovered there, if you ever see any artwork of it, it's pictured in a large way. This valley was renamed the Valley of Eshkol, which means Valley of Cluster. Shamua and his brethren were like Judas, of whom we say what might have been. You know, we often look at Judas from this standpoint in history. He's the betrayer of the Christ. But before he betrayed Christ, while I know he was a sinner and did some things he shouldn't have done, yet he walked with Jesus for 3.5 years. And whenever you read in the Gospels about Jesus sending the apostles to do something or whatever, Judas was in that number. Judas did many good things before he did his infamous deed. Shamua and his brethren also did many good things, but they ruined their good, which is why we don't know these men by name. They should have become famous, but instead they have become infamous. And I'd encourage you, do not imitate these men at all. Do not think like Shamua and his 9 brethren. Instead, think like 2 other of his brethren whose name I didn't list earlier and whose names were not up on the screen. Do you know who Shamua and his brethren were? Well, Joshua and Caleb traveled with Shamua and his 9 brethren into the land of Canaan and spied it out. So we know the names of Joshua and Caleb, but we don't know Shamua and his brethren. We just simply know them as the 10 spies. Why do we know the names of Joshua and Caleb, but we don't know the names of Shamua, Shaphat, Igal, Palti, Gadiel, Gadi, Amiel, Sether, Nabi, and Gul? Well, let's find out. All right. Numbers chapter 13. shows that Shammua and his brethren were leaders in their tribes who went into the land of Canaan, which is something Moses never did. Evidently, not even as a shepherd when he lived in Midian for 40 years, which wasn't too far away. But these men obeyed Moses and the Lord, going through the land of Canaan and bringing back some of its fruit. Carrying one cluster of grapes on a pole between two men. Well, the implication must be that the cluster of grapes was huge. Otherwise, why did they have to carry one cluster of grapes on a pole between two men? But these men, unfortunately, ruined any good that they might have done for Israel, and they ruined any good that they might have done for themselves. When they said this, look at verse 27. Then they told him, Moses, and said, "We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit." And I'm sure when Moses saw that, and Israel was like, "Wow, look at that cluster of grapes." And too bad the story doesn't end there. But they kept talking. Look at verse 28. "Nevertheless," or maybe you have "but," or "how be it," or something like that. In other words, well, what we've just said to you is good, and you can see that it's good, and these things are true, but what we're about to tell you negates all that. We've got a greater truth here that just totally nullifies what we've just told you and shown you. "Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan." Okay, you see some big grapes here? And you know about the land flowing with milk and honey? Well, let me tell you, the people that have been eating that stuff have gotten really big. And we can't handle it. But Caleb quieted the people, according to verse 3, and he encouraged them, saying, "Let us go up at once and take possession." Why? "For we are well able to overcome it." But the 10 contradicted him, verse 31, but the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants." Were they exaggerating there a little bit? I mean, if the land is devouring these big, huge giants, then what are you guys worried about? So see, they're just putting their own spin on the report here, making it sound like it was worse than what it really was. "And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." So it sounds like they had personal encounters with these people, and it scared the daylights out of them. But Caleb saw something that the 10 did not see. And so he encouraged Israel, "Let's go up immediately, let's go up right now and take possession of the land," declaring not only that they were able to overcome it, but that we are well able to overcome it. And we'll see a little bit later why he thought that way. However, the people were more inclined to listen to 10 rather than 2. And if you don't think that we think that way, just see how the news affects people. Or if a rumor or gossip gets started, just see how it affects people. We have a tendency to listen to the greater numbers than to the smaller numbers. Now, the 10 spies focused on the size of the Canaanites, who evidently were quite large. Perhaps Goliath. Remember, you know, he was from that area, from the land of Canaan. Goliath was 3 inches short of 10 feet. Perhaps he was one of their descendants. 38 years later, as Israel is about ready to enter the land of Canaan again. Moses reminded Israel of the size of one of the kings of the land. And here's what he said in Deuteronomy chapter 3 and verse 11. He said, "For only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the giants. Indeed, his bedstead was an iron bedstead. Is it not in Rabbah of the people of Ammon?" Now watch how big his bed was. 9 cubits is its length, and 4 cubits its width, according to the standard cubit. Okay, so if a cubit's 1.5 feet long, that would mean that this man's bed was 13.5 feet long and 6 feet wide. Now, I'm 6 foot, and I got to add 0.5 inch in there. I don't need a bed that big. Obviously, he was a big guy. Now, let's give him a foot of head space, you know, between the top of his head and the headboard, and a foot below his foot and the footboard. That's plenty of room. It's more than I have in my bed. That still makes him 11.5 feet tall. So you can see what the 10 spies are talking about. These dudes are big, man. How are we going to fight against them? Numbers chapter 32, and you can turn to that passage, will show just how bad their reporting was. Almost 4 decades later, when 2.5 tribes wanted to stay on the east side of the Jordan, and in the mind of Moses, he's thinking, oh, they want to stay on the east side of the Jordan, and they don't want to come over onto the west side and do all the fighting that the rest of their brethren want to do or need to do to conquer the land. Okay, now that wasn't the truth as he found out later, but I want you to notice what Moses says to these 2.5 tribes. Because he's thinking they're not going to go into the land. They're going to stay back and not fight, and that's going to discourage the warriors who do go into the land of Canaan. And look what he uses as his basis for their discouragement. Verse 7. He said to them, "Now why will you discourage the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord has given them? Thus your fathers," the 10 spies, "did when I sent them away from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up to the valley of Ishkol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel, so that they did not go into the land which the Lord had given them. So the Lord's anger was aroused in that day, and he swore an oath, saying, 'Surely none of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and above shall see the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord.'" Moses continues, "So the Lord's anger was aroused against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years, until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was gone. And look, you have risen in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, to increase still more the fierce anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will once again leave them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people." It's going to happen again, he tells the 2.5 tribes. But of course they say, oh no, we want to stay on the east side of the Jordan, but we will lead the warriors. Our warriors will go and they will lead the rest of Israel into the land, and we won't come back to our inheritance until the land's all been conquered. And Moses was happy with that answer. But look what he's doing here. Don't you remember what the 10 spies did to us? How they discouraged us? And that's why we spent 4 decades out here in the wilderness instead of living in the land of Canaan? And you guys are about ready to do the same thing. It's sinful to discourage one another from doing the right thing. It is sinful to implant in the minds of our brethren a defeatist attitude. We can't win. We're defeated before we even begin. Let us never be guilty of that. The 10 reported accurately of the land, but they did not report accurately concerning the nations, for they believed that the Canaanites were stronger than Israel. And so the 10 spies concluded that Israel was outgunned, outfinanced, outmanned, and outsized. Were the Canaanites greater than the Egyptians? How did Israel manage to escape the Egyptians both in Egypt and at the Red Sea? They didn't do it themselves. How did they manage to survive in the wilderness for the 2 years after passing out of the Red Sea, and by the time they got to the border now in Numbers chapters 13 and 14, well, God was taking care of them. You see, forgetting history diminishes faith. Remembering history increases faith. So here's the problem. The 10 spies looked at the power and size of the world, and it was impressive. They looked at themselves, small of stature and former slaves, and they were not impressed. But that wasn't a problem when it came to the Egyptians. Why is it suddenly now at the Canaanites? You see, they failed to look at the Lord and see what He had already done for them. I mean, how could they forget the 10 plagues? How could they forget the Red Sea crossing when the Lord just opens up this huge body of water and allows Israel to go through, and then when the Egyptians try and come behind them, He collapses the water on them? How could they forget that? It's been 2 years, not 200 years since it happened. How could they forget the fact that God dropped manna right out of the sky onto the ground for them to pick up and eat? Well, they may have reasoned, Don, that was then, and this is now. Just because God can do that then doesn't mean that He can do it now. See, we have a tendency to think that way. Okay, you know, we read about all that great stuff in the Bible and the miracles and all that stuff, but He's not going to part any Red Sea for us. He's not going to drop manna out of the sky for us. So, you know, we're kind of on our own. No, we're not. God is still as much alive and active in this world as He ever has been. Miracles, God working through miracles, and God working through providence is still God working. And we need to have faith. We need to learn from this. By their leadership and by their greater numbers, Samua and his brethren outnumbered the faithful 10-2. And influenced Israel not to live by faith and not to live by their own history. Therefore, the Israelites complained about their leadership. Not about themselves. That's got to be the fault of the leaders, right? Numbers 14, verse 1. So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, if only we had died in the land of Egypt. You've got to be kidding me. Or if only we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us out to this land to fall by the sword that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? Back to slavery? Hello? So they said to one another, let us select a leader. We need a new guy, and let's return to Egypt. Verse 10. And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. And for their sins of faithlessness, fear, and frightening Israel, the Lord took the lives of those 10 spies. In verses 36 and 37, Numbers 14, the Bible says this. Now the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation complain against him by bringing a bad report of the land, those very men who brought the evil report about the land died by the plague before the Lord. and their children, who are convinced would be victims, they are the ones who end up entering the land of Canaan. So is the Lord in charge, or is the world too strong for the church to overcome it? Do you believe the message of 1 John chapter 5? Our brethren over the centuries have lived by this verse, and they have lived victoriously. Listen to what it says. They're just speaking about us Christians today. For whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that overcomes the world, our faith. Can we also live victoriously through faith? Or are our problems greater than the problems that Israel faced and greater than faith? Numbers 13 shows that Caleb knew why they could take the land. Listen to this. Numbers 13:30. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." Now, Caleb, why do you believe that? Was he a man of great self-esteem? He thought very highly of himself. And he had all this stuff that we're being taught today that you should have. Is that why he thought that way? Was it national esteem? You know, we're the Israelites. We can go in there and just do whatever needs to be done. No, it was God esteem. He valued God and what God was able to do. In Numbers chapter 14, notice in verse 6, what the Bible says. Numbers 14:6. "But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, 'The land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land.'" Now listen to this part. "If the Lord delights in us," that's the condition right there. Not our size or our military strength or anything else. "If the Lord delights in us, then He will bring us into this land and give it to us. A land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." Case closed. See, Caleb and Joshua knew that it depended upon the Lord, not their own ability or strength or size, and it depended upon whether the Lord delighted them. And, well, after putting 10 plagues on their captors of the past 400 years, bringing them through the Red Sea, giving them all the food and water that they need for 2 years, going through a wilderness, did He delight in them? You know, Caleb and Joshua, you know, they must have talked about this. Man, the Lord obviously delights us. What else does He have to do to say, "Here's the land, go in and take it"? And so they said, "Brethren, don't rebel against the Lord. Don't fear the Canaanites. Their protection has been taken away. The Lord's with us." I mean, could not the same Lord who poured out those 10 plagues on Egypt put the same plagues or something else upon the Canaanites? Or was that all the ammunition he had and he ran out? And now Israel's on their own. So, you know, what's going on? Why were the Egyptians no match for the Lord, but the Lord's no match for the Canaanites? Well, they still didn't get it. If you look at Numbers 14 and verse 39, listen to what happens here. "Then Moses told all these words to the children of Israel, and the people mourned greatly, because the Lord had said, 'That's it. Turn away. We're leaving.' And they rose early in the morning and went up to the top of the mountain, saying, 'Here we are.'" Now the people have decided they want the land. "Here we are, and we will go up to the place which the Lord has promised, for we have sinned." And they think that solves the problem. And Moses said, now why do you transgress the commandment of the Lord? In other words, he said, you're not going into the land now. I want you to turn around from this place and go back into the wilderness. For this will not succeed, Moses said there in verse 41. Do not go up, lest you be defeated by your enemies, for the Lord is not among you. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and you shall fall by the sword. Because you have turned away from the Lord, the Lord will not be with you. But they presumed to go up to the mountaintop. Nevertheless, neither the ark of the Lord nor Moses departed from the camp. Then the Amalekites and the Canaanites who dwelt on that mountain came down and attacked them and drove them back as far as Hormah. And some of them died. Have you noticed that man has a propensity to do that, whether it was Israel then or anybody in just the world as a whole now? God says, I want you to do this, and man says, no, I want to do this over here. God says, I want you to believe this, and we say, no, we want to believe the opposite. God says, I want you to value this, and we say, no, we want to value just the opposite. It just seems to be our nature, to be contrary. And yet, the Lord forgave them. Because Moses had asked God to forgive them, and he did. But he just said, all those who didn't believe, they're going to die in the wilderness, and their children are going to go in. So we've changed course, and they decided to go, and the Lord said no, so they went, and they didn't succeed. They failed horribly. I want to encourage everyone here today to have the spirit of the two and not the ten. It's the spirit of the two that will overcome the world. Is the Lord with us as much as He was with Israel? I mean, what more does the Lord have to do to show us that He's with us? I mean, after all, He gave His blessed Son, Jesus Christ, to die for us, to forgive us of our sins, to empower us, and to enable us to enter into heaven eventually. What more does He have to do? What greater gift, what greater sign or demonstration does He have to perform to say, I'm with you. I delight in you. I want you. I want you to come up here and live with me in the true land of Canaan. Or has the Father pulled back and left us on our own? Haven't I read in the Bible that Jesus said, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end. Matthew 28:20. Now, if that's, look up the verse, see if I quoted it right or not. So I want to ask you, do you believe that with all your heart? Do you want to encourage not only yourself to believe, but to encourage your own brethren to believe? Don't have a defeatist attitude. Don't think that we're defeated before we even begin. So rededicate yourself today, and I didn't realize I wasn't totally caught up on the slides there, so anyways, there we go. Rededicate yourself today and start following Jesus today. Don't delay anymore. If we can help you or assist you, come forward right now as we stand and sing.